We're here for a motions hearing in case number W17-004. Appreciate the parties taking the time to set this aside. It looks like it was well worth us putting this on the calendar. If I could ask the party representatives to introduce themselves, just state your name for the record, please.
Erin Ferguson on behalf of SDOT.
Tadas Casillas also on behalf of SDOT.
Matt Cohen for the Cascade Bike Club.
Leah Silverthorne for the appellants.
And Pat Schneider on behalf of appellants.
Thank you. So how I'd like to proceed is I have the briefings on the motions from the parties, and I'll issue, hopefully, a comprehensive oral order, and then there'll be an opportunity for questions and also to address if you see anything that I haven't addressed with the order. And feel free to ask questions as I'm going as well. I'll start with the Cascade Bicycle Coalition motion. Just as a matter to quickly address, as a standalone motion, there's just not enough in that for me in specificity. I know essentially, as I viewed it, it was essentially we agree with the city, and here's a specific proposal how we proceed is on the November 21. I couldn't grant that motion on itself if the city hadn't submitted its motion. Lack of specificity as to what's missing in the exhibit list, what's too much there is, essentially if you look at the city's motion, that's what I need to make a decision. So on that, I will deny that motion, but I think as you'll see as we go, essentially we'll wind up in the same place you were wanting to. So, but
perhaps I should wait then to
There is more to come. But I just wanted to share that with council. I think it's important to understand for future motion practice. I mean, I just need more to make a decision on. I understand the point of the motion is that there's not enough in the or too much in the exhibit list as a generality. But beyond that general allegation, I need to see specifics so that I can make a decision as opposed to this is what we see as a problem. Mr. Hearing Examiner, then you go forth and make them do something. I need to be told exactly what that is that you want me to do. Like in the city's motion, they specifically identify those areas where there's too broad an allegation or too broad a description of the exhibits and or specifically calling out witnesses. So.
Your Honor, then maybe I should. I feel that I may not have adequately set forth the concern and the remedy that we had in mind. If I could have 1 minute.
You can, but I do understand. Part of the trick we have with motions is you're stuck with what you wrote, so we can't add anything new. And as I understand it, what you're looking for is a new exhibit list by November 21st. Is there more to it than
well,
that?
The crux of the motion is that the final witness and exhibit list produced by the appellants did not comply with your direction at our previous pre-hearing conference or with the requirement that a final witness and an exhibit list actually disclose the witnesses and the exhibits that a party intends to call at hearing. So the relief we requested was that you direct the appellants to file a revised witness and exhibit list that conforms to the mandate that you imposed at the previous pre-hearing conference and to the letter and spirit of the rules that require parties to disclose who they actually intend to call at hearing. In response, you have now a concession by the appellants that in fact they plan to file a revised witness list I had intended to raise the point that it's still not realistic for the time that's available to each side to present its case, and to ask to basically to renew my request that they file one that will conform to the time that you've provided to their side to present a case. And I guess what I'm most hopeful of is that at this point, I don't feel that Cascade is in a position to say you should strike these witnesses. I know the city had some concern about that. That wasn't our concern. Our concern is that we have notice of what they're planning to do with their hearing time, and that the hearing examiner imposed some ground rules that will assure that neither side exceeds the permitted time allowed to them. So for that reason, we supported the city's suggestion that we have a time clock for each side, and that it be managed so that no one gets prejudiced by inadequate time to present their case. That's all.
Okay. And I won't prevent you from adding argument or anything along those lines earlier. I was just trying to go, essentially going for a low-hanging fruit on a small item, really. It's mostly the format of the motion that I really needed more in it, too. If the city wasn't here and I got that motion, I understood everything that you said.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you put everything that you just said in your motion. There's simply substantively not enough there for me to rule on it normally. And I say mostly I think that that's of the only benefit to the council for future reference.
I
think we've got plenty to work with between what's still on the table. Moving on then to the city's motion. The first item is and I appreciate you asking to discuss this as we go. I do leave that open to all of you. On this item of the exhibit lists provided in the what was submitted by the appellants, I do agree that the categories is not adequate. As cited by the appellants in their brief, is that the parties have a right to full disclosure of facts and a fair hearing. That goes both ways. I certainly want the appellants to have their opportunity to present their case, but at the same time, the respondents and intervener need an opportunity for full disclosure of what's going to be happening at the hearing. They need to know which documents will be used, and a reference to a file or a particular deposition and all of the documents that come from that is not specific enough to know what they need to prepare for hearing, and that's the whole purpose of a final exhibit list. So we do expect that, that for the final exhibit list there be a list of specific documents that will be used so that they have an opportunity to prepare and respond to that. There's nothing in the categories that are wrong. I'm certainly not ruling that because you've identified certain categories that any of the documents are irrelevant, as was raised as a concern in the response. But the responsibility for the appellant is to identify specifically which ones they're going to bring at hearing, and decide for themselves which are specifically relevant and will be used.
May I just add a little bit? So one of the concerns we had is the city's disclosure list actually also included catch-alls. That's why we weren't as concerned about the catch-alls. For instance, it includes all data supporting the EIS, each draft of it. We actually have an email drafted to you. I haven't sent it to you yet because we're preparing for this hearing. We can talk about that offline. I understand the city's frustration, and I'm frustrated too. We still have 15,000 documents that we haven't been able to get through. And so the purpose of those catch-alls wasn't to play hide the ball or to not provide disclosure, but to deal with the reality that we are still, up until the day of trial, going through these documents that the city disclosed in an organized manner. And I would love to be able to say I can put this chunk of documents on the list, but they're not even organized in any way. And we had this discussion with you when we talked about the hearing. So while I understand everyone's frustration, we would request that we be able to update the exhibit list catch-alls with any documents that we find on or before trial, and we're committed to provide the city and Cascade with an updated list by the 21st, as Cascade suggested.
And that's the direction you'll see that I'm going. I do think that that's the appropriate direction to go, is to provide an updated list. I've been, you know, cutting out categories and cutting you off from using documents wouldn't serve any purpose at this point. But I don't want to keep categories on anybody's list. I didn't catch that, since you didn't mention it in the response, that was an issue. But, you know, for example, if someone says at hearing that, well, we said in our list that it says including without limitation of the following, and you listed 10 and 11 and 12 come in, and that's included but not limited, I typically would not allow that to come in. So just understand that whether we catch all this today for any party, if it's not listed on your exhibit list, I strong likelihood that it would not come in at the hearing.
I would like to just make one point, is that we're a responding party, mm-hmm. And so I think our ability to identify what we would put forward with specificity is a little more difficult because we'll be responding. I think that we've listed everything we will rely on, but to the extent that I don't actually recall that we did leave any catch-alls, but to the extent that we did, it would be because we're a responsive party and we don't know what we would be responding to. So I just want to kind of leave that.
So ideally, you will know what you're responding. I mean, that's really what the purpose of today's hearing is, that they're gonna tell you, and you're gonna need to tell them what you're gonna use for that. We all recognize, I think, in exhibit lists, there is one catch-all that everybody gets, and that's in rebuttal. We don't know where that's gonna go. There is some organic nature to the exhibits that come in at a hearing, and we have to be somewhat responsive to that. But I do. Particularly given the large amount and volume of documents that you're all having to fish through to identify where this exhibit and the evidence is going to go, I do want you to be fully disclosing that to each other before the hearing starts. Okay, I think I've said enough about that. So I think what we will do is look to getting a new exhibit list on the 21st then. And we'd be looking just to get rid of, I think the categories, the parties are aware of the categories. Do we need to discuss that at all, that are too broad?
The categories that you put in your motion.
I think that that's what we're talking about. Yeah.
And I'll point out to you the categories. I have an email draft. I'll just send it to you today.
And just so I'm clear, I mean, anything that's including without limit the following, you know, it, if you list it, you get it. If you don't list it, you don't. So that's my intent with that.
My only suggestion would be some of those, including without limits, are documents that are referenced in the specific exhibit.
I mean, if there's a sub-exhibit within an exhibit, I think you've captured it. Unless the parties see that, I don't know all of these documents, of course, at this point. So, but
if you'd like to hear from Celius. The question I've got just is on timing. To the extent that there are catch-alls that Ms. Silverthorne points out to us, we want to be addressing those as well. But mm-hmm. as Ms. Ferguson said, there's a bit of a chicken and egg issue here, where I think as respondents we're wanting to be able to read and react to before we can specify.
Again, so let's address that now. If the appellants are submitting a new exhibit list on the 21st, that really only leaves the 22nd before the hearing starts for the respondents and the intervener to essentially update your exhibit list. Is that? I don't know that that's sufficient time to really complete that. You still, of course, have the first few days of the hearing where the appellants are putting their case on. So I don't know. Does it? I don't see any real benefit in trying to get a new exhibit list out on the 22nd from the respondents. That's not going to benefit anybody that I can see. But to maybe have something identified after the first day of the hearing, Monday the 27th.
That would be acceptable, thank you.
That gives the appellants at least some time during the hearing. I recognize you probably do it in the evenings since you don't have time to do it during the hearing itself. But I think it's the best we could do under the circumstances. Is there anything else as far as exhibits that needs to be addressed then in the context of these motions?
I think the parties are working together to try to figure out how to get them all here.
With a large volume of documents, right? Understood. Let's move on to witnesses. I think that the coalition's response essentially addresses the issue raised in the motion by the city. The list they provide of individuals they're taking off, their exhibit list is adequate. There's a single remaining witness. It was Claire Hoffman. I think that the appellants have a right to call witnesses that they choose as opposed to those that are identified by the city as far as witnesses, and it's a single witness, and I don't think it's overburdensome on the city. So we're going to go ahead with that.
No, we did provide the revised exhibit here.
That's already in there. Right, so we'll take that as is.
And we are committed to only putting on the witnesses that are on a duplicate of a lot of these and/ors were because of availability or authentication.
Right.
The city to stipulate a number of documents. For example, Barry Knight is a witness, the expert witness that we don't want to call. He did work with Vic Bishop, but we haven't gotten the city's agreement on stipulating to the admissibility of his testimony or his underlying documents. So there are a number of witnesses that may actually fall off as the trial continues.
Beyond the list that you've identified.
And we'd welcome you to send us a stipulation.
Okay. I think Josh already did.
It's been abroad, anything that Barry worked on, but we don't know what he worked on. Right. So we're not saying we won't agree. We just don't know what you're asking us to agree to.
Is that something separate than what's in the list? Okay. Yeah. All right. Then I'll let you work that out between yourselves. Is there anything else that we need to address in the context of the motion as far as witnesses then?
Time management.
That's the next item. one thing I did catch in the response is that the appellant indicated it believes that the should be allocated more than half the time. At the pre-hearing conference, I did split the time, so it was 2.5 days for each side. So if there's if there was a different understanding from the appellants, I need some explanation as to what that is and. Mr. Bauer may have missed the 2.5 days each. So when there's a greater allocation of time expected by appellants, what is that expectation, and how do we expect to accommodate the respondent's time within
sure,
that as well?
Sure, I'm happy to address that. I think Mr. Bauer understood that the time would be about equal, recognizing that, as respondents pointed out, a number of times their respondents, and they will have less to put on, they have less witnesses, less exhibits, and the appellants bear the burden, and it's a closed hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Closed fact hearing, and I don't think we have any anticipation that we're going to take four and a half days and leave the parties with a half an hour, but the idea was that to give you the ability to control the case as it moves forward as opposed to some sort of like punch the clock timing where, you know, maybe we rest after 2.5 days and the parties put on evidence and then we're done after day three, and I don't think that's the way it's going to go, and we'd hope that we wouldn't be...
So I didn't understand the last statement you made.
Did you? So if, for instance, we do the first 2 days reserve, we may end up needing to reserve time. Just giving
a
little bit more flexibility to run the courtroom, we are confident we can kind of keep this all on track and
mm-hmm.
to not taking all of the time, but just understanding that as appellants, as the party that bears the burden to put all the evidence in at this hearing in the limited amount of time that we do, record is closed on appeal, giving a little bit more flexibility than a 50-50 split, keeping in mind the burdens of the parties.
So, what my inclination is, and I want to make sure this fits with what you're suggesting. I'm not sure it does, but I'm not inclined to do a timer. I view this as the appellant's. They've agreed in the pre-hearing conference in their briefing that this is a set time period, and my preference is to set a time period that you put your case on within that, and then the time's over. If you choose to put on one witness for that whole time, that's your choice. I'm not going to put a timer on that. My only concern with us doing it that way is, frankly, is time eaten up by both sides within the others for cross-examination. So I don't know if I put a timer on it. We have a clock. I feel like I'll simply be watching that closely because I have restricted your time within that. One thing I don't think that we addressed that I certainly didn't have in mind when we set the amount of time was an opportunity for a rebuttal. And so rather than having you take some of the time from your case in chief, my suggestion was that we do add some additional time for a rebuttal opportunity. I think you're entitled to that, and that was not my anticipation, that you would have to do that within 2.5 days, given the volume of the record and what we have to address here. So what I'd like to do is look at the calendar to add time specifically for rebuttal only and to divide that time, unless you tell me 2.5 days is not enough to put your case in chief on. Now, this is your really last chance to do that. We stick with that time period, and you get that amount of time to put your case on. You get the time that you get it, and just stick with that.
So if I could address this briefly, I think we're fine with the discipline imposed by a number of days. What isn't entirely clear to me from the conversation is my assumption is when you say we get half the time or roughly half the time, that doesn't mean that we stop at midday on Wednesday because, again, there will have been a lot of cross-examination time that shouldn't come out of our case. So I guess my hope is that while we don't do a strict chess clock, that if there's a three-hour cross-examination, that's taken from their case and not from our case. I think that's the only fair way to do it. And then the second issue I hope we could address is exactly how many hours a day we're going to have to work with in terms of, you know, when we start, when we finish, how long the breaks will be.
Great. And I do have some suggestions on that.
Mm-hmm. If I could just respond, I think Mr. Schneider's suggestion that, you know, cross-examination is appropriately attributable to one side or the other, we agree with. And that, I think, identifies why we were suggesting. I understand that's not your inclination, Mr. Schneider, but that's precisely the reason, because if 3 hours, where we cross-examine their witnesses taken out of our time, the same should be true of them as well if they take a 4 or 5 hour cross-examination of one of our witnesses, but they will have already exhausted their 2.5 days. That, again, gets to the equities and the balance between the time that's remaining. So the only real way, and the reason we suggested that was just because of that technique in other administrative contracts, was a way of managing that is at least above board, but understanding that's not your inclination. I think Mr. Schneider's question gets to the tough nut about that, if it's going to be, holding us to that, but giving them the ability to cross-examine at will in the remaining 2.5 days, that puts us at a disadvantage.
And I don't think I understood the request for the timer as being just for cross-examination. I thought it was across the board. In my familiarity with the chess is that you get a certain amount of time and then you get it hit. So,
our inclination is that we're all adults and that we should have flexibility to manage the case as it goes forward. I don't have the history that you all have, but it seems like we can all. I've tried many cases and we've managed to manage cases within the time that's allotted. And the bench is usually a big help in pushing the parties along.
But I think it is important that when we conclude our case, we know how much time we have available for cross-examination, for example.
Right.
Because that may mean we defer a witness who's on our list in expectation we'll deal with it on cross.
Yeah, I think we'll have to do that. So given that, let me make sure that I understand what we're doing here. We've got, I guess we have to keep track of everybody's time, no matter how much, when you use it. And you get 2.5 days each.
Your Honor, I want to envision what I would anticipate happening if we don't strictly manage each party's time. And this is no allegation of bad faith. If the appellants are thinking they're going to put on a 2.5 day hearing, they'll aim to stop at midpoint of the third day, and the city and Cascade will then put on their case. And in the event that there is a robust cross-examination of the city's or Cascade's witnesses, Friday will arrive and we will not have had the opportunity to put on our case. And it will simply be time will have run out. So I guess I would encourage the examiner to use a chess clock or some vehicle that will enable us to hold each side accountable for the time they use, just so that we, you know, that's our version of the nightmare scenario.
Mm-hmm. So maybe I wasn't clear. I was agreeing with you. I don't have a chess clock, so if you want to provide one, you may. But otherwise, I don't see whether I'm keeping track of the time here or we're using a chess clock. There is an allocation of 2.5 days for each side. And there's under those circumstances, I guess I'm not seeing how a party could overuse its time allocation. If you take 5 hours in a cross-examination on Monday, that's out of your 2.5 days.
Well, I think all
and
the
so even if they don't finish by Wednesday, partly because of that, because their case is bumped into Thursday, you've already used what we may imagine if you divided up equally on Thursday. So.
Okay. Then I
so I'll leave it at, I'm going to keep track of time. Mm-hmm. If you provide me with a chess clock, I'll use it.
Deal. Thank you.
Is the plan then to find additional time for rebuttal?
Yes. So we haven't addressed that yet. But right now, case in chief is 2.5 days per party. This is your last chance to tell me that's not working.
I'm comfortable with everything except the strict allocation of 2.5 days. I think it is meaningful that the appellant has to spend a fair amount of time educating the examiner about the underlying facts that are not in dispute. You know, just about there are facts here that you have to know that both sides would want to present to you. And because we go first, that comes out of our time. And so I just think there ought to be some flexibility for you to take that into account as we go into the hearing.
Is there a way to just address it now?
Excuse me?
Is there a way to address it now?
Well, no, all I'm suggesting...
You need 3 days, and you want to give them 2, and then I hear from them whether that's enough or not.
I'm not asking you to allocate a specific amount right now. I'm just suggesting that your chess clock approach not be, you know, literally by the minute, but that you retain some flexibility to judge, you know, whether how time is being used. Are we wasting a lot of time on, you know, objections that really, you know, maybe aren't necessary? How much time should you allow just for the basic presentation of the facts? All I'm suggesting is that you allow some flexibility, and you could update it on a daily basis in terms of how the hearing is going.
I guess the best I can say about it is my inclination is if we're setting a deadline on time that we're going to stick to it.
And
that even if we do that, yes, I always retain the discretion to change that if I so choose during the hearing. But that's unlikely to happen since we've set the time. Because I need the parties to have an expectation how to function around that. And it's simply because we've all agreed to it. If this was a open hearing and we were going to get everything in and not worry about the deadline as far as times, which we've already agreed not to do, then that's what we would do. But here we're trying to set some boundaries to it. But I understand your point.
Just to be absolutely clear, I'm not asking for any extension of the five days. I'm simply saying, you know, it might make sense to give us an extra hour or two out of those 5 days. That you should make a judgment call about that as the hearing goes.
So that every party is clear, I am setting a deadline and everybody has that. If I so choose, at the end of that 2.5 days, if there's a witness that is compelling, is still adding good information, and we need another hour for it, we will do that.
Okay.
But that will be at my discretion.
Yes, that's all I'm asking.
But I will be sticking to the timeline as of now. And we're not going to hope for more time. So, but let's move on to rebuttal. I have reasonably high hopes that a hearing I have set for the 4th and 5th is going to be dismissed, but I can't count on it at this time. We do have time on the 6th. I do have a pre-hearing conference set for 1 o'clock. Otherwise, that day is open. So my inclination is to set it for the 6th, but also ask you about what your calendars look like for the 5th.
And I'm afraid my calendar is completely full on the 6th and 7th. I could do it on the 4th or 5th.
Okay.
Yep. It's not as available 4th, 5th, or
6th. Okay. December. Intervenor?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what we'll do is I'm going to ask you to set aside the 5th now and hope that things go the way I expect they are with this motion in this other case. Otherwise, we'll have to find another day for it, for a rebuttal.
Could I put in a request that we start later on the day?
On the 5th?
Yeah.
What time?
10:30. But if that is a constraint, that is a problem, we will make it work. Just in an ideal world.
Let's set aside the whole day right now, and because right now appellant has no idea whether it's going to do rebuttal and how much that's going to look like. But I don't, and this is for your sake as well, we don't want to go beyond the 5th. So if that 2.5 hours is going to gain us something, then we're going to want to make that up somewhere. Your request is perfectly reasonable if appellants say we've only got a couple hours of rebuttal, and we'll start at 10:30 and certainly try to accommodate that.
Thank you.
And with things up in the air enough on my motion, the 5th is really a penciled-in date anyway, since that hearing could very well go forward.
Start times and end times.
Let's go to that now. We are going to, since it's been noticed as 9 o'clock for the first day, we will start at 9 o'clock. I can accommodate the parties with a bit more time by starting at 8:30 Tuesday through Friday. For lunch, we will have an hour and 15 minutes each day. That will not start at a set time. That will be somewhere around the lunch hour. But the idea is that we stop at a logical point based on where we are with our testimony from witnesses. We do need to end at 5 o'clock each day. I believe hearing examiners sometimes have squeezed out another half hour, but the air goes off and my staff leaves at 5, so it's really preferable that we leave at 5 o'clock. If on Friday we have half an hour more worth of work to do, we'll do it, but we're not going to schedule that in for now. Anything else for scheduling that there are questions about?
So should we assume that in addition to the lunch break, there will be 15-minute morning and afternoon breaks, or will we go straight through?
There will be breaks, 10 to 15 minutes. I don't set it hard at 15 minutes. If we're moving along with testimony and it's looking like we're needing to pick up time, I try to trim a few minutes here and there where we can, but there will be breaks. There will be at least one morning break and one afternoon break as well.
Mr. Vansell, I do have a scheduling conflict. My understanding is that Mr. Brower raised it at the last pre-hearing conference that I was not at. I have two conflicts next week. One of them I've managed to go away, but I am speaking at a CLE on Tuesday afternoon, so I will not be able to be here from our noon break until about 3 that afternoon, and I would just ask for accommodation if I happen to be doing the witness, that we break that witness and resume when I can return. But this has been scheduled for months.
You'll find that in my hearings I'm perfectly flexible with, and I leave this to the parties to let me know if we need to have, if witnesses are available to only a certain time. That's something, especially with how we're going to track the time. If, for example, a city witness is only available on Tuesday, we will want to try to get them in on Tuesday. And take that out of your time to do that. So that's something we can figure out the first day, and we'll see where we are with your timing.
Okay, thank you.
May, at the risk of revisiting the witness issue, I have one more clarifying question on a topic that we had discussed at an earlier pre-hearing conference about just the logistics for the city witnesses that appellants intend to call and that we intend to call. And I think my recollection is that we were trying to consolidate that time by allowing the city to go on direct and then allowing the appellants to both cross-exam and do a direct, and then ostensibly we would do a redirect and a cross, and then they'd have a final or something. I just wanted to make sure we were understanding.
I'm glad you revisited that, because I actually, with this new scheduling of time, I'm not sure whether that's still appropriate to do or not. And I simply put that to the parties and see if that's a better way to manage the time. Are there witnesses that are crossover, and you essentially get them as your witness instead of doing just cross? Are there witnesses in that category? And if so, should we try to accommodate that way still?
Well,
might make it a little more difficult to keep track of time. We'll figure that out when we get there. But
we haven't spoken about this, but my response is, yeah, if we can agree to just bring a witness once, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
If we're going to not call a city witness as part of our case in chief, we would, of course, want assurance that that witness will be called. So that would be the only concern we would have, I think.
And what I'll do on that is, let's leave that until the first day of the hearing. You will let me know if we're going to address someone in that manner, when the witness will be called, whether it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And if you're both calling them as a witness, I guess we'll just take it out of both your times mutually. That would be the best way to address it.
And we'll commit to giving you guys as much time as humanly possible so that you can have them available.
And we can coordinate in terms of who we intend to call. We, at this point, based on what we've seen, I think everybody on our list we expect to call, but we can.
But if we can use that as a working assumption, then, yeah, that'll make it easy.
Okay.
It's certainly more efficient if we do it that way, as far as time management for everyone.
And even if we don't call them, we agree to make them available if they're on our list.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I think, as between us, I think we should just coordinate at the close to the end of your case in chief on those witnesses based on what we're hearing. We still intend to call, and we can decide how to address that, if that's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're looking for flexibility and maximizing time management, and you'll find that I'm perfectly amenable to that. I'm glad you raised that. Thank you. Anything else that we need to address today?
I have a couple of logistics.
Yes.
Questions. One is that we have a video, and I believe the appellants have videos as well. What's the protocol here for hard copies and technology for showing videos?
I'm going to ask you to coordinate with our legal assistant to do that, Ms. Johnson. We do have a screen for it, and essentially we will need a copy. She'll tell you the format that it needs to be in.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be in, like, a paper form for a video audio, obviously.
She promised to meet with me after the hearing.
There you go. In fact, after I leave, you can talk with her about that if you want.
And then Cascade has a very modest exhibit list, and we have shared hard copies or links to the video with the other parties. What's our responsibility with regard to how many copies, how many does the hearing examiner want?
Sure. I only need one copy. That's both my copies, both the copy for the record and for my use. And then, of course, a copy for original documents that are not possessed by the other party. You need to provide those. I'd leave it to you, between you and the city.
On that last point?
On the appellants, you need to provide them a copy as well.
Yes.
And I leave it to you and the city to work out whether they want a copy of it or not. Generally, you'd provide a copy to everybody, one copy to everyone.
One copy to each party and one for you and for the record.
One for me.
One copy for you.
That's right.
And that
and
would
the
be
record,
the record
right.
copy. Thank you so much.
Yes.
And I assume one copy for the witness to use?
If necessary, yes. I wasn't sure with the video whether that was going to happen or not. But that's really, I leave that to counsel to manage. If you're bringing it through the witness, you can use your own copy for that or what have you. That's really an issue of management. I do prefer that counsel isn't jumping up and handing a copy of a document and standing down at the end of the table and talking to them about it. We need to have voice is recorded. So if you're going to have a witness going over a document, it's certainly preferable that they have a copy of what they're looking at instead of shuffling papers too much. Anything else? Very good. All right. I will try to reduce as much of this into an order as I can, though I expect you all to be proceeding, particularly on the exhibit list and stuff. You'll probably be getting any order about the same time you're executing that. So thank you all for your time, and I look forward to seeing you Monday the 27th.
Thank you.
Thank you.